Today, we're on the road in Baltimore, Maryland, to visit Babe Ruth's birthplace, eat a crab cake or two, and visit the ballpark that started a movement. It's Oriole Park at Camden Yards. This week on Ballpark Road Trip. Welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. In this podcast, we will be traveling around to each major league city and talking to locals who know their home ballparks inside and out. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and if you're listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're planning on visiting a ballpark sometime in the future, well, you've come to the right place. Here on Ballpark Road Trip, we will pick a different ballpark every week and cover everything you need to know for your trip, including transportation, tickets, food, places to visit while walking around. We'll talk pre-game traditions, post-game spots, and anything else to help make your visit a success. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of Ballpark Road Trip. And before we get going today, right off the bat, I have to apologize to all of you. I've been lying to you. I have been living a lie to you guys for, like, the last 45 seconds. Remember when I said, and you can skip back if you need to, remember when I said we might eat a crab cake or two? Well, we are not going to be eating any crab cakes. You can have as many crab cakes as you want, but I am highly allergic to crab, as well as shrimp and lobster. So I'll just stick to having a hot dog or maybe some Boog's barbecue. Anyway, on today's show, we are going to be talking about an iconic ballpark and the one that changed everything. Oriole Park at Camden Yards opened its gates in 1992 and became an instant classic. Now, I went to Oriole Park at Camden Yards in 1993, a year after it opened. I had just graduated 8th grade, I was heading to high school, and my parents needed a family vacation. So that summer, I took my first ballpark road trip. Let's take a moment to remember life back in 1993. There were four divisions, no wild card, and the San Francisco Giants were on their way to winning 103 games and not making the playoffs, because the Atlanta Braves won more games and won the Western Division. Yes, you know, because the Braves and the Giants are both in the western part of the United States, Western Division. Anyway, the MVPs that year were a pre-steroids Barry Bonds and a pre-Nugenics Frank Thomas. The rookies of the year in 1993, all Southern California, Mike Piazza of the LA Dodgers and Tim Salmon of the California Angels. We started off our road trip in New York City. We got into town, and although my brother and I were left at the hotel that first night while my parents went to see Angels in America on Broadway, the next day we took the subway up to the Bronx to Old Yankee Stadium. We had seats behind home plate, and the first thing I realized was that it was a lot louder than it was in the Coliseum. Actually, it was a lot louder than any place I had been to in California. East Coast baseball seemed different. It seemed like the crowd was reacting to every pitch. It was a great atmosphere. Mediocre stadium, but fun atmosphere. We then headed upstate to Cooperstown and visited the Hall of Fame, and then came back to New York City for a Mets game at Shea. We then headed down to Washington, D.C. for a few hot July days on the Mall. I believe it was so hot that we went and we saw the movie Rookie of the Year to get out of the heat. From there, it was off to this week's ballpark, which I will talk about in just a moment. But I can tell you, it was really the highlight of the trip for everybody. So after DC and Baltimore, our final stop was Philadelphia to see the Phillies and my hometown San Francisco Giants. Technically, I live in Oakland, but at that time, I was a big fan of both the A's and the Giants. I'll tell you how that happened in a later episode. But as we pulled into our hotel in Philadelphia around 3 p.m., I discovered that my parents had saved the big surprise for the end. We were staying at the same hotel as the Giants, and in 1993, that meant Barry Bonds, Will Clark, Matt Williams, Dusty Baker, and more. I got a ball full of autographs, I met new Giants owner Peter McGowan, and my 8-year-old brother told Rod Beck's girlfriend that he was too scary. R.I.P. Rod Beck. It was a fantastic trip, and as it turns out, it wasn't my last ballpark vacation. That trip inspired more ballpark road trips in my future. But back to Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Even back then, I knew it was everything I wanted in a ballpark, and it was everything the Oakland Coliseum wasn't. I don't bring up the Coliseum to disparage it. In fact, from 1988 to 1992, I was enjoying peak Oakland A's baseball. The stadium was full, the A's were winning, there was no Mount Davis, just an amazing view of the Oakland Hills. I loved going to A's games. But I want to just take a moment to use the Coliseum as a way to convey what was new and thrilling about Camden Yards to me as a 12-year-old ballpark fan. Number one, the facade. I love a good facade, always have, ever since I first saw pictures of Comiskey Park and Wrigley Field as a 9-year-old, I loved the look of retro ballparks. Camden Yards had gorgeous red brick that matched many of the buildings in downtown Baltimore, including the famed B&O Warehouse. The Coliseum, on the other hand, has no facade at all. It's dug into the ground, and all you see is the concrete upper deck and a little bit of ice plant. Number two, Camden Yards is asymmetric. I love the quirky angles, how right field looks different than left field. My full life at the Coliseum had been 330 down the lines, 375 to the power alleys, and 400 to center. Dependable, but boring. Number three, Camden Yards is downtown. We walked from our hotel to the ballpark, and at that point, before new high-rises went up, you had a great view of the downtown skyline from inside the park. There's no walking to the game at the Oakland Coliseum. We drove, parked in Lot B, went to the game, and went home. Completely different experience. So, needless to say, aside from sharing an elevator alone with Barry Bonds and being too shy to say anything, Camden Yards was definitely the highlight of that whole trip. Now, let's get into it.
Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
The noted political commentator George Will, huge baseball fan by the way, he said the three most important developments in baseball since World War II are Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier, the advent of free agency, and the opening of Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Overnight, it changed what baseball fans wanted from a stadium. Oriole Park at Camden Yards. It even sounds old-fashioned. It has never had a corporate sponsor. It has a capacity of about 46,000, and it was designed by HOK Sport, now Populous. And even though HOK Sport had done the new Comiskey Park in Chicago and some other things before, this was really the ballpark that put them on the map for me as a fan. For more on Camden Yards and the Orioles in general, I'd like to welcome in Richard Hardesty. Richard, you're a longtime Baltimore native. What is your connection with the Orioles?
My connection with the Orioles is I'm an assistant professor of history at Anne Arundel Community College in Arnold, Maryland. And so my dissertation happened to be on the Orioles. So, you know, the title was Magic in a Tragic City, the Orioles and the Redevelopment of Baltimore. And so I basically tell the tale of how you can't really talk about modern Baltimore without telling the tale of the Orioles. I mean, I remember when I first met my wife and she asked me who I liked as a musical group. And I like the Beatles. I'm a big Beatles fan. I think greatest band ever walked the face of the earth. And she says, well, what did they ever do that was so revolutionary? and you know, and being a historian, you know, for somebody listening today, you know, you don't really hear the revolutionary feel of what the Beatles did. You kind of sort of have to put it in context as to what was going on when they came out. And, you know, and I showed my wife and said, here's the number one song in the United States before I Want to Hold Your Hand became number one. She listened to that. She goes, well, okay. And then here's I Want to Hold Your Hand. And then the difference is night and day. And the same thing happens with Camden Yards. If somebody today wonders, well, what's so great about Camden Yards? Why is it the ballpark that changed America? And so you have to go back to see what the two most recent stadiums that were constructed and opened prior to Camden Yards, which was Sky Dome in Toronto, and then you had the new Comiskey Park in Chicago. And those stadiums were all about the future. They had these like futuristic designs, and Sky Dome in particular, I think, somebody, I forget, one observer said, well, if the Houston Astrodome was known as the eighth wonder of the world, then Sky Dome has to be something out of this world as to how futuristic it was. Like you had hotels in the actual stadium, the retractable roof,
I
all
was
that.
impressed they had a Hard Rock Cafe in the stadium. That was, and now that would not impress me at all. But back then, as like a 10-year-old kid, it's like, oh man, I gotta go there.
But for the Orioles to go back, if the Orioles to actually go backwards, I mean, to build a stadium that had elements of like Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, Ebbets Field, some of these old time stadiums, which was actually, I think it was Larry Luscino's idea. Janet Marie Smith gets a lot of credit, and a lot of it's deserved because she did a great job, working on that stadium. But she always points to three people that played a big role in the overall development of the stadium. That was Larry Luscino, who worked for the Orioles, Roland Heeman, who was the general manager at the time, and then you had Frank Robinson, who in the late 80s was the manager of the Orioles. And one of the things he said was, you got to look at Frank Robinson, was a great baseball man, a great baseball player. He played back in the days where you had some of these classic ballparks. And one of the things that these classic ballparks had was a very asymmetrical design. You look at Sky Dome, the dimensions are very symmetrical. You look at, the new Comiskey Park that was built was very symmetrical. And Frank Robinson said, as a player, you kind of want to have some home field advantage in terms of, how the field is set up. So that kind of benefits you as opposed to your opponent. Because if you play 81 games in that stadium and it's asymmetrical, you're going to know how the ball bounces better than your opponent will. You're going to know that small foul lines aren't going to benefit the hitters. And so he was a big proponent and, driving home the idea, we want a stadium which has some, dimensions that are asymmetrical. And that hadn't been done in baseball for a bit, if I'm not mistaken. And, Roland Heeman was a big proponent of that as well. And the other things about the Camden Yards, which makes it unique, is the fact that usually, you get this idea you're going to build a stadium. And so whatever's in its way, you just tear it down and you build the stadium and have the city or the area, you take the shape of the stadium, if you will. What they did is they basically built the stadium to take the shape of the neighborhood that it was in.
Constricted by the buildings or by the different things that were already there in that neighborhood.
Right, like the warehouse, they decided to keep the warehouse, and that's one of the big features that people, when we were growing up, when I was growing up in the early 90s, I was when the stadium opened, I was 14, and I remember two of the things that were really big about Camden Yards was an old Maryland Lottery sign that had a finger pointing to the L logo for lottery that said "Hit it here," and people wanted a hit the hit it here logo in right center field. And then of course, obviously everybody wanted to hit the warehouse. You have players, I think it was Ken Griffey Jr. was the only person that so far to my knowledge has ever hit the warehouse on the fly. And that was during the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, famously, yeah, he's the I think the only one. I think you're right.
But I mean,
You have other
but
people who have
that's,
hit it out to Utah Street, though. Is that correct?
yeah, there've been over as far, I think there's been well over 100 home runs hit out onto Utah Street. I know Gunnar Henderson right now holds the record for the longest home run hit, and that's 462 feet. But I don't think anybody has ever hit the warehouse.
Do they mark those home runs on Utah Street?
Yeah.
Nice.
So what they do is they evidently they I'm to my knowledge, I have no idea exactly how they do it. But if you go onto Utah Street, you'll see these plaques on the bottom. It's not just for Orioles that hit the home run. It's also opposing team. So whoever hits a home run out onto Utah Street, they'll put a plaque on the ground where the ball lands. And for Ken Griffey's home run, they actually put a little plaque right on the warehouse.
Oh, nice.
I mean, and I think when they were doing it, if I remember correctly in my research, I know Janet Marie Smith and the people on her staff were wondering, well, how close is the warehouse to the stadium? And is this going to be an issue where you're going to have people hitting bombs that hit the warehouse? And I think early on in Camden Yards' history, they put, shatterproof windows in the warehouse. And if I'm not mistaken, that was a big concern. But to only one person has hit the warehouse. I think somebody was telling me the other day that, the easiest path to hitting the warehouse is if you hit the ball straight down, the right field line. The distance from home plate to the warehouse is about 439, which these major league hitters today can hit it no problem. But depending on where in right field, right center field you hit the ball, or I said maybe like depending on where you hit the ball, it gets a little further away. And so
Okay, right.
I mean, but you go there, you look at like the dimensions and the whole layout, and you think, oh yeah, I can hit that. And
Yeah.
then you find out it's a lot harder than it is. I mean, it's like for me in slow pitch softball. I mean, I used to watch them, play games all the time. The ball would loop in, and I say, oh, I crushed the ball. I still haven't hit a home run, but that's because, as my wife says, well, maybe you're not that good.
Well, let's go to maybe the mid to late 80s. What is life like in Baltimore then? You've got the Orioles playing at Memorial Stadium. What's the area around Camden Yards now? What's that area like before the ballpark?
Well, the area before the ballpark is basically the warehouse and what used to be the offices of the Baltimore, Ohio Railroad Company. And so, that was originally the site where they were supposed to build a stadium back in the 70s for both the Colts and the Orioles. And there were plans of that. It was like a dome stadium, for example, because both the Colts and the Orioles were not very happy with Memorial Stadium. And so there was talk about the Colts leaving for Tampa Bay. There was the talk that the Colts were going to leave to like Columbia, Maryland. But they were going to build a stadium. They were actually going to tear down the warehouse to build this dome stadium. I don't think there's a whole lot going on around Camden Yards by the mid-80s when they're looking to build Camden Yards.
Now, were you old enough to recognize that the Orioles needed a new stadium when Camden Yards was built, or were you happy at Memorial Stadium as an 11-year-old?
As an 11-year-old, I didn't really understand all that was going on. I think I remember when somebody was reading an article about the new stadium saying, well, Camden Yards has 48,000 seats. And I remember asking my mom, I said, what's so great about Camden Yards? It has fewer seats than Memorial Stadium. So, as an
Right.
11, as an 11-year-old, I didn't really recognize what was going on. I didn't, recognize the history behind why you needed a new stadium or the whole context behind it all. But as a kid, I was happy going to Memorial Stadium. But reading about people's experiences, some of the issues that both the Colts and the Orioles had with the stadium, some fan experiences. I mean, I can understand why people had issues with Memorial Stadium.
I mean, granted, you weren't driving back then, but do you find it a lot easier to get to games now than the area where Memorial Stadium was before?
Oh yeah, I find it a lot easier. I mean, you can take the light rail. Light rail is one of those things that, you can hop on in Anne Arundel County. Like, there's a station not far from where I live called Cromwell Park that, sometimes me and my wife, if we go to an Oriole game, we'll hop on the light rail, and that will take us right up to the stadium. And there are other places you can go. You can stop off at a light rail point and go down to the stadium. But I mean, even if we don't take light rail, there have been instances where I've driven to Camden Yards and you don't get parking passes to park at the lot. There's a lot of different parking garages nearby, and you can just sort of walk nearby and get to the stadium that way. For example, I'm on a slow pitch softball team that we play Monday nights in Annapolis, and right as the Orioles were about ready to clinch, the American League East. In fact, I think it was the day after Brooks Robinson sadly passed away. I wanted to go see the Orioles clinch, and in order for them to clinch, they had to win that night against the Nationals, and Tampa Bay had to lose. So we took the gamble thinking both things would happen. I was going to go up there to pay my respects to Brooks Robinson, and or this one of the st two statues that they have for him. And we just drove to the stadium, and we didn't have any issue getting there because we had somebody that was very familiar with the area, and we just parked in a garage that was maybe, I don't know, about, I'd say about maybe 50 yards from the stadium, and we hung out at Pickles Pub right outside the ballpark.
Is Pickles Pub still there? Is that still a good place to go before or after a game?
Oh yeah, Pickles Pub is still there. It's a good place to go. I mean, there are a couple places near the stadium, but Pickles Pub, to my knowledge, is probably one of the closer places right outside the stadium. You can go get a little drinky poo before the game if you want to, or get some food or what have you, and maybe enjoy the razzle a little bit before you go enjoy the game. There's also, I think, Pratt Street Ale House. I think there's Mother's Bar and Grill not too far from the stadium, but I mean, there's some places around there, but I know Pickles is the big one.
Nice. So if you wanted to go to a game last minute, how would you get your tickets? How would you go buy it? Do you go through the team, or is the secondary market okay in Baltimore?
I'd say either SeatGeek or StubHub.
Where do you like to sit when you go to the game? Do you have a certain area or section, or do you like to move around? What's your favorite
I
place in
like
the
the first
park?
base side. I like the first base side right behind the dugout. I like being close to the field. Though, I mean, I have an 18-month-old son who I'd like to take to Oriole games, so I probably would want to sit, a little further away. I like first base side, but my teammates sort of outvoted me last September, and we got seats in left field. Or, or the one thing I would like to try out if I go this year is to go into the bird bath.
Where's the bird bath? Where is that located?
I think if I'm not mistaken, it's section 86 right by the bullpen. So
And what makes the
you
bird
have,
bath different than other sections?
well, they have Mr. Splash, and whenever I think the Orioles either hit a home run or get an extra base hit, Mr. Splash starts spraying water into the crowds.
Oh, fun. This I'm
Yeah.
just looking at here, and it's $25. Celebrate with Mr. Splash in section 86. We encourage fans to celebrate with the Orioles team by mimicking turning on the faucet, activating the sprinklers, drinking out of the Homer hose, and joining in on the fun in section 86. You may get wet. Oh, bring your water, bring things in a waterproof bag. That sounds like fun. That's
Yeah, they didn't want to
a
do the
cool.
bird bath last year either. So we got
Oh
left field seats. But
yeah.
yeah, I think even Mr. Splash is getting a bobblehead this year.
Oh, all right. That's section 86.
I mean, I've sat as far back under the lower deck. I mean, I've sat in like the last row. And there might be issues sitting back there because you might have the overhang might block you a little bit. Or if you have like, sight issues, that might be a problem. I mean, I know they have like televisions and stuff. But I think most seats are pretty good. I mean, I've sat further back, from like, the dugout. I've sat maybe first couple of, rows, like right underneath the overhang, and those seats were pretty good. And I've sat in like a couple of left field seats a couple of times, and those seats have been pretty nice. I mean, I think most of the seats in Camden Yards are very good, and you can, for one game, be able to take in the scenes and watch a game and have a good time.
Let's talk food a little bit. Are you someone who likes to try the new things that they introduce in the park every year, or are you a pretty traditional hot dog and peanuts type person?
I'm pretty much a hot dog and peanuts person. My wife says I eat like a 7-year-old.
Mine does too, but that's because I go to the store and I come back with Capri Suns. So, I definitely eat like a kid. Can you bring in your own food? Do you ever bring in your own food, or do you always get the food at the game?
I always get Boog's.
Oh,
I
Boog's.
think, yeah, I can't. You can't go wrong with Boog's Barbecue.
Right, that's the barbecue place. And where is Boog's located? Easy to get
On
to?
Utah Street.
On Utah Street. Oh, okay,
It's
great,
like
great.
Utah, so you can like walk in and you'll walk in on Utah Street, and you'll get to see like Boog's Barbecue. I think it's placed right behind, not I won't say right behind, but like not too far from the back of the scoreboard, the
Right,
center
yeah.
field scoreboard. So, I mean, it's easy access either side of Utah Street that you can go on.
And Utah Street, just for a reminder for people, is that street in between the ballpark and the warehouse that they closed
Right.
down. But that is an area that there's a good possibility that people will be entering from that part of the stadium. Is that correct? That's a pretty big entrance.
Yeah, I think that's probably the entrance. I mean, the
Okay.
biggest entrance. I mean, there's other parts of the stadium you can enter into, but I think that's usually the big go-to because you have all these different shops. I mean, there used to be, I think there used to be, and it might still be there, an art place that, for the longest time, I would go into that art place where they have different artistic portraits involving the game, and there was a painting of Brooks Robinson that I had wanted for the longest time, but it cost $1,600.
So Utah Street is a pretty good place to go if you arrive early before you go to your seats. Or if you arrive late, maybe it's a good place to go during the game. You can still maybe keep in touch with the game around. Are you able to see the field as you walk around the stadium at Oriole Park?
I know if you're in the concourse outside of Utah Street, I mean, they have like television sets set up along the different vendors so you can watch the game as it transpires. I also think that, I mean, you can sort of look out the I guess the section exits or section entrances. You can sort of look to see what's going on. But
Right.
now there is something in left field. I think they call it Orioles Legends Park, where they have the statues of the six Hall of Fame Orioles, like, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken, Jim Palmer, and Earl Weaver. There's statues, honoring those six Oriole greats. And I think you can sit in Oriole Legends Park and be able to see the field from there. So I think that part of the stadium, and I even think maybe the part in Utah Street by around right field, where there's like I think a standing deck where you can sort of look and watch the field and see the
Right.
game. I think those are the two big places.
That area in left field, is that kind of behind the bullpens? That area, is that where that park, that monument or those statues would be?
I think it's not too far from the bullpen. I
That's
think
not...
you got those two, the two rising bullpens. You got bullpen one and you got bullpen
Yeah.
two. And I think the park, the Legends Park, is not that far from it. I think you got the bullpens, and then you kind of go closer to center field, and I think the park's there. I think, the park overall is left center field.
The bullpens were always pretty cool in my mind because I think those were the first time that they kind of stacked them that way. I don't think that other stadiums had really done that
No, I
before.
don't think so. I mean, and that's one of the great features about Camden Yards was, to kind of give context of why Camden Yards was so big. I think one of the things that Janet Marie Smith talked about when they were designing and working on Camden Yards was that the Maryland Stadium Authority wanted them to use concrete.
Oh, really?
And yeah, they wanted them to use concrete, and they wanted to go with steel trusses, because, it gives greater flexibility in design. And even though you spend more money on them up front, the ability for them to use it over a long period of time sort of cuts down on like maintenance costs. And so they sort of fought on that one. That was one of the big battles that they had with the Maryland Stadium Authority, was use of concrete and over steel trusses. But Janet Marie Smith and company, they held firm, and I'm not sure how they were able to win that battle, but they were able to use steel trusses. And I think that was one of the features that other stadiums going forward used, was the use of steel trusses.
Nice.
And I pr probably fouled up the pronouncing of that word either, so.
That's quite all right. As a non-architect, it sounds completely legitimate to me.
Right,
So,
that's what I'm thinking. I'm in history because I
yeah,
can't do architecture or math.
I'm doing this whole podcast about buildings, and I don't know much about architecture. It seems
Yeah,
this is a
and I'm talking about a
great
building,
pairing.
and yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask you a few questions. I like to ask a lot of people these questions. I want to get your answers for your home ballpark. And actually, we already talked about this, but we talked about Utah Street. We talked about the area right behind, or not right behind, but in left field that you can kind of go and see some statues. Are there any other places that people should visit while they are at Camden Yards that they should make sure to see?
I mean, there's the Babe Ruth Museum, which, if you're into the history of sports or history of Baltimore sports and specifically, or the history of sport in general, you have, the Babe Ruth, Museum, which is literally, they like to say, a long fly ball from Camden Yards. So it's like right near the stadium. That's
but
a
not
cool
in the
place.
stadium. You have to go and buy your own separate ticket for the Babe Ruth Museum.
You know, one of the interesting things is Babe Ruth's father, his original bar, Ruth's Cafe, was in present is now present day center field at Camden Yards.
Oh, like inside where the center. Okay, great, cool.
Right. So like where center field is now, where you have Cedric Mullins, you know, patrolling center field. That used to be where Babe Ruth's father's, you know, his bar was with, which was called Ruth's Cafe. That was there. It was a place, I think, called Conway Street. But then I think I'm not sure what happened to the first Ruth's Cafe, but then Babe Ruth joins the Boston Red Sox in 1915. They win the World Series. He gets some winnings, and word on the street is that Ruth took some of the winnings from the World Series and helped his father and mother, I think, helped his father open a new Ruth's Cafe, which is, I think, on 38 Pratt Street, which is now a gentleman's club.
Oh, okay.
Only in Baltimore.
Yeah. If people were coming into Baltimore for a weekend and they had the chance to only see one game, would you recommend a night game or a day game at Camden Yards? Like a Friday night? I don't know what whether you do night games or day games on Saturdays, but would you recommend a Friday night game, a Saturday game, or a Sunday afternoon game?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, I've gone to day games. I've gone to night games. I think for me, I like the day games because I like being home and in bed at a decent hour because, you know, my bedtime is, you know, very, very early. As my wife laughs as I stay up with our 18-month-old.
So my final question is, you know, everyone's final question. What's your favorite part of Camden Yards?
My favorite part of Camden Yards is actually going around the concourse and getting to sort of see some of the historical things. You know, being, you know, somebody teaches history, you know, likes the history of the game. You know, I like seeing the statues of the Oriole, you know, Hall of Fame players. I like going around. I think at one point the stadium had pictures of different moments in Oriole history on the lower level concourse, like the 420 game winners from 1971, you know, McNally, Palmer, Cuellar, Dobson, the World Series victories in 66, 70, 83, you know, the four, you know, the no hitters in Oriole history, whether it was Palmer in 69 or what was it? The one with, you know, Mike Flanagan, Mark Williamson. I want to say the four Orioles who combined for a no-hitter. I think it was Flanagan, Mullacky, Williamson, and I think Olsen that were part of the no-hitter back in the late 80s, early 90s.
In Oakland? So
in Oakland.
I was at that game. Yeah, I'm an Oakland A's fan. So I was at, that's the only no-hitter I've ever been to was when the Orioles combined to do a four-person no-hitter. So
right. And so, I mean, I like seeing the historical aspects. I mean, you go different parts of the park. Even if you go up to the upper level concourse, you get to see, you know, like the different team photos of each year and their record and what they did. Different pictures of like ticket stubs from the playoff games, whether it's an ALCS or World Series. You know, and for me, you know, I like seeing the statue of Brooks Robinson, and you know, not only the one that's in the stadium, but the one that's directly outside the stadium, because, you know, he's somebody I was born after his playing days ended, but he was and is really like my hero. And so, you know, I mean, he was somebody that growing up, you know, especially in the last maybe the last 10, 15 years of my life, was somebody that if you're going to emulate yourself after anybody, it's going to be him. You know, my dissertation before the Freddie Gray riots happened was I was going to open it with the line, if I ever had a son, I would name him Brooks after Brooks Robinson, because, you know, Gordon Beard, who wrote for the AP, said back in the 70s, like in context, Reggie Jackson goes to the Yankees from Baltimore and says, in New York, they're going to name a candy bar after me. Well, Gordon Beard said, well, Brooks never asked anybody to name a candy bar after him. In Baltimore, people name their children after him. So I want to open my dissertation with that line. And my advisor says, yes, you're going to open with that line. And I said, it's set in stone. And my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, said, no, absolutely not. I don't want to name my son after a baseball player. And we met Brooks Robinson back at a autograph signing at the dugout zone. I had the opening of my dissertation here. I'm shaking, my hand's shaking. Like, I can't believe it. I'm meeting you. I said, I've waited my whole life to meet you. And he smiles at me and he says, I've been here this entire time. What took you so long? I think he understood how nervous I was, and I felt at ease. And here's a man that like, all these people in Baltimore were named after him. He reads this and he says, oh, very nice. And you could tell he was genuinely touched by it. And after everything, and he took a picture with me, and my future wife. And he says, I really appreciate you coming out. And I'm sitting there saying, you appreciate it. I'm nothing. You're everything. And you appreciate me. My wife is in tears. My girlfriend, who will be my wife, is in tears. We literally walk out to our car, and as soon as she sits down, she says to me, we can name our son Brooks. And, you know, we did have a son 18 months ago who's named Brooks after him.
Wow.
And,
wow. And, that's great.
And so that's probably more than you ever want to know about. But that's for me, anything Brooks Robinson is, for me, the favorite part of Camden Yards.
No, that was actually really important to hear, because now I can tell that to my wife and ask her why we're not naming our kid Jose Canseco. So that works out pretty well. No. Well, anyways, thank you for talking with me. This has been a great conversation. Camden Yards is a pretty special park, so I'm glad I got to talk to you about a lot of the other things surrounding the Orioles and the park, and not just as a travel recommendation. So this has been really great. Well, that's our show for today. I want to thank Richard Hardesty again for that truly wonderful in-depth interview about Oriole Park and the Baltimore Orioles. If you have more that you would like to recommend, feel free to write the show. And maybe in a few episodes, we're going to try to have a listener comments section. So hopefully you guys can write in or phone in, and we'll play whatever you have. Next week, we are back in Southern California to visit Dodger Stadium. Until then, this is Jacob Russell Steiner saying, next week we are back to Southern California to visit Dodger Stadium. Talk to you later. Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram, or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.